Welcome to the Philip Wiley Show. Take a look behind the curtain of professional hacking and hear compelling discussions with guests from diverse backgrounds who share a common curiosity and passion for challenges and their job. And now, here's your host, offensive security professional, educator, mentor, and author, Philip Wiley.
Hello and welcome to the Philip Wiley Show. This is another series, episode of the series, Stay Safe Online, powered by SquareX. And today I've got Jesswin back with me again today. So welcome back to the show, Jesswin. It's good to have you back on.
Thank you so much, Philip. Yeah, I'm super excited to be back on the show and discuss the features that you have to offer with SquareX.
Yeah, I'm very excited to hear, you know, some of the new features coming up. It's already an amazing product, but always cool, you know, whenever amazing products are improved even more. So I'm really curious to see what you have to share with us today. So the topic is in-browser malicious file detection. So it'd be interesting to see what all you have going on with that new feature in the product. So if you wouldn't mind just kind of sharing with us about these new features.
Yeah, sure. So one thing we have realized over the past few years is, you know, the lack of detection when it comes to malicious files. The products out there, they are not doing that great of a job. A lot of times, you know, the AVs are unable to detect. At the same time, the delivery agents, the mail clients are not flagging something that should have flagged as malicious. So let me go ahead and share my screen. So today we'll take a look at the in-browser malicious file detection, something we've been working on for a while. So one of the reasons we wanted to tackle this problem was because if you take a look at most of the attacks that happen these days, whether it is, you know, a very simple attack against an employee or whether it is a large group like an APT performing a targeted attack. So all of them try to leverage files to the best they can. So in the recent time, we have seen macro-based files being used quite a lot on all of these attacks. So what attackers usually do is they'll go ahead and try to leverage a situation. For example, in COVID times, a lot of people were looking for jobs and they were going through financial stress. At the time, they'll try to send them, you know, mails from as a recruiter. And that document itself can contain a malicious macro, which in turn runs on their machine and ends up compromising their machine. So yeah, this is something we have seen quite a lot in the past few years, and macro-based threat have existed from long time back and are being used right now as well.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because like going through the OSCP course, one of the payloads they were mentioning, you know, during that time, this was back 2012, 2013, was using macros in the payloads.
Yeah. It's something that attackers are like still using it because it's still supported on Microsoft Office and it's very widely used these days.
So how is a file-based payload delivered to the victim?
So what ends up happening is anytime someone wants to target or like let's say a group wants to target an individual on an organization, they'll try to profile the users the best they can. And one of the sources of this profiling is emails. So and the APT groups, the attackers put in like months of effort into this to figure out, you know, what's the user behavior. So to give you an example, attackers, what they'll do is they'll go ahead, initiate different campaigns. So one campaign could be focused on, you know, finance-based mails. One campaign could be shopping discount-based mails. One could be on sports, movies, traveling, and whatnot. Now, attackers will go ahead, buy out various domains, and send all of the mails to the user. Now, based on the user's activity, right? So for example, if the user is opening an email, at that point, the mail will have a tracker and it will be notified to the user or the attacker that, you know, someone had opened this mail. So that means they are more interested in the topic, whichever corresponded to that mail. And now attacker will profile the user this way and figure out, you know, this is the interest of the user. And based on this, they will go ahead, create more targeted mails. Now, the first idea is to, you know, gain trust of the user. Once you have gained sufficient trust, at that point, the attacker will go ahead, ask the users to do something, such as, you know, opening a zip file, opening a document, and so on. And then the moment they open the file, it ends up compromising their machine. We have also seen social media being used as a source of delivery of payload. So at SquareX itself, we noticed that some of the zip files were sent using Facebook Messenger. Good thing was Vivek had educated almost everyone in the company to make sure to not open, not trust any of the attachment that we are getting from any of the sources. So in a way, we prevented the attack. But in reality, in most of the companies out there, not everyone is familiar with, you know, all of these threats. And even if the security team is trying their best to educate everyone, there could be a possibility that sometimes people, you know, just are, let's say, not very familiar with this attack, and they open up the file and it ends up compromising them and eventually causing damage to the whole organization. So that's how, you know, threats are lurking in today's world. And email is like the primary source right now of delivery of malicious payload. Once the payload is delivered, the moment you click on it, it compromises your whole machine.
See, that's pretty interesting because, you know, before at one time, it was mainly through email. But as you kind of shared some of these other channels, they're using social media. As you mentioned a while ago, some of the emails going out from recruiters because people are looking for jobs. The job market's a little tighter now, so people are a little more desperate for jobs. So being able to leverage LinkedIn to send, you know, some of those files and stuff, as you mentioned.
Yeah. And the sad part about COVID was a lot of things happened that we are not aware of because the sad event of COVID, the deaths in a way covered up and a lot of other attention or like other issues were not given that much amount of attention and they never came to the light of the public. So crazy number of scams had happened during the time and digital scam were like one of the most prevalent ones. Yeah.
Very, very interesting. And like in the US, we've got like an election year coming up. So I can just imagine how some of these channels will be leveraged for threat actors to spread disinformation to try to affect the election.
Yeah. They try to leverage like everything at their disposal. Yeah. So now when it comes to like delivery of the payload, right? So the question to ask is what all is the mail client, mail server, social media platform doing? So we did some market research and we figured out that Gmail, when it comes to web mail client, has the most amount of market share. About 72% is just Gmail. And then in terms of mail server, we have Google as well as Microsoft's mail server being the primary dominant players in delivery of the mail. Now, one challenge or one loophole sort of we found out was that the mail client as well as the mail servers are not doing that level of scanning. So anytime a malicious document comes in, at that point, the mail server might not be performing additional checks. Similarly, when a mail is delivered, the mail client might not be performing additional checks. So sort of attackers are leveraging this as well to, you know, deliver malicious payload. And in a way, you know, the mail servers, mail client are doing their best to focus on deliverability. But at the same time, there's some level of compromise in security.
So when the file is downloaded, what does Windows perform? What kind of checks does Windows perform?
I'll come to the Windows checks in a minute. First, first I'll explain the mail client-based checks. So let me go back to my VM. Yeah. So the way mail clients work is, let's say, here we'll consider the example of Gmail. Now, what ends up happening is if an attacker sends a target or document directly, and this is the first time the attacker is engaging with the user, right? So Gmail might go ahead and mark the mail as spam. But what ends up happening is if the attacker tries to converse with the user and It's good, always good to start without an attachment. So you can send out a normal email. At that point, the moment you reply, you become like sort of a, you know, a recipient that was acknowledged. So to give you an example here, I have received a couple of mails from John. So if I try to compose a mail and search for John, I won't find John here. Reason being, I haven't engaged with John yet. So here, now I have one more email. It says introduction. So now the moment I reply to him, let's say, hi, John, nice to meet you. And if I send it, now what ends up happening is, as a victim, I have engaged with the attacker, right? So if I try to compose, it might take some time, but what will end up happening is John will show up as a trusted recipient. Now, this allows John to go ahead, send out further files, and the checks that will be performed on mails that are being being sent by John will be much less. So as a result, first thing the attackers would do is to gain some sort of trust, to have the initial engagement set up. Now, once you have the initial engagement, you gain a little more trust. And at that point, they'll end up sending various zip files, document files, and whatnot. So one thing that we noticed while we were, you know, building out our feature was file type checks. So here I have a Hello World doc file. So now what an attacker can do is they can go ahead, change the file type of the file. So what I'll simply do is I'll create a copy of the Hello World file and just rename it as helloworld.pdf. Now I'll send a mail from John. So I'll send a mail to John from Tim. Just mention PFA. So please note, this is an actual Word file. So this was the file content. And now this is the PDF of the Word. This is not a converted version. It is just a doc file, but with the extension of .pdf. So I'll open this, send it. Now it will be delivered here. So this is again the Tim account. So we'll wait for a few seconds and the mail should deliver here very soon. Yeah. So now you can notice it is an actually a doc file that was sent, but here we can notice it says helloworld.pdf. Sorry. So in this case, again, the email server went ahead and considered it based on the extension, not on the actual file type. Now, as a result, what ends up happening is the mail servers, the mail client, whenever they're performing the check, they'll perform some test over PDF file, not on the document file. As a result, again, this file could contain much more malicious content than the AV solutions or the mail servers, mail client are aware about. So to further explain this, here I have a mail that is flagged as malicious by Gmail. Yeah. So this is flagged as malicious by Gmail. So emp.xls. So what I've done is I have also downloaded this file here. So now what I'll do is I'll simply rename this again to emp.pdf. And then I'll send it over. So please note, now this file actually contains a malicious payload. It was flagged previously by Google. And if we'll wait a few seconds, it will come up here. Now, someone might say that, you know, changing the extension of the file itself might make the file not function as it was intended. But it's very dependent on the operating system you are using. And more importantly, attackers will leverage social engineering to the best they can. So what they'll do is, once they have gained sufficient trust, they will have set of instruction that, you know, for some odd reason, Google is flagging this as virus or, you know, malicious, it's completely genuine. And so for now, I have just changed the extension to emp.xls.pdf. So what you'll have to do is, while before you run it, you just rename it back to emp.xls, remove the PDF extension. And this way, attacker can convince a user to go ahead and, you know, run the file. So at this point, Gmail does not detect this. This is an actual malicious file. So that's how easy it is to, you know, go ahead, transfer a malicious file. Now, from social engineering, we can have it run as well. So this was the first lack of check that we felt, you know, the mail servers, mail clients are lacking. They're not detecting based on the actual file type. They're relying on the extension of the file, which is a big, big problem in itself. So this was the first one. Next is the poor attachment, basically detection capabilities. So there's a typo in here. But right now, there is a lack of, you know, checks being performed on the attachment itself. So to explain this, I do have one more malicious macro file. So what I'll do is, I'll go ahead and send a mail to Tim Dawes. Again, EFA. So here I have one more. This file is actually containing a malicious macro. So I'll send it over. Now we'll wait for a few seconds and the mail should be delivered in here. Now in the meantime, I'll also cover, sometimes the mail delivery can take like a few minutes time as well. So in the meantime, I'll cover the issues or, you know, the protections Windows itself has to offer. So it has been a debate on whether to allow macros or, you know, to block it altogether. Microsoft themselves at the start of 2022 made a decision that we should block it by default. Later in the month of July, they rolled it back, saying that, you know, they are working on it more. And at the end of December, they blocked it by default again. So the behavior right now is to block VB execution by default. And there's also a protected view that prevents editing and active content to be triggered. Now, anytime we download a file from the internet on Windows, what happens is there's something called Markov Web. So the file is marked as being downloaded from the internet and which resource or which website specifically. And this allows Windows Defender to perform additional scans. So anytime there's a Markov Web, Windows Defender will perform additional analysis on the file. And all of this helps user, it provides user a little more protection, but it is not perfect. Reason being, a lot of times people would be using macro-based Excel files. And they would enable the setting that, you know, VBA execution has to be allowed, macro has to be allowed. And it's very easy to, you know, mark certain domains as trusted site, effectively removing the effect of Markov of the web. So for example, here, let's say right now, because again, we are working with macros quite a lot. What I've done is I have marked Gmail, any file that's being downloaded from Gmail as a trusted, entrusted site. So if we go to internet options, here we have the trusted sites, and here I've added both of these. So anytime something is downloaded from here, it will automatically be considered as trusted because I'm assuming, you know, all the mails that I'm getting are from, I do not want to be bothered by, you know, Windows Defender blocking things and so on. And this happens quite a lot with people who are using macros on a regular basis. So the moment you do this, now the mark of the web is completely useless. Windows Defender won't go ahead, perform additional scan on it. And as a result, the macros are now in the wild and they can effectively do anything. Just a second. Yeah, for some reason I didn't get the mail. Yeah, it might take a few more minutes. So AVs are also not doing a good job. So to give an example, right? So what I'll do is I'll quickly go ahead, go to VirusTotal. And upload the same Excel file that we have. So this is the one I uploaded. So here we can notice it was flagged by 4 out of 61. So 4 is a very, very low score. And a lot of times you also have to consider it could be false positive. So a lot of services, a lot of AVs only consider the file as malicious if we are seeing a large number of checks. 4 is a very small number to consider the file as malicious as of now. So if we go back, yeah, it will take a while for the file to be delivered. Yeah. It usually takes 3 to 4 minutes. So now there are different type of Excel files as well. So before 2000, before Word, Excel, Office 2007, there used to be another format called the OLE original format. And then we had a different format that's being widely used with DocX, XLSX, and so on. So we have received the mail. So now, as you can notice, this is a macro-enabled file, but Gmail didn't say anything. It's scanned by Gmail, everything is good to go. The moment you download this, there's no flags or like no prompts being provided by Windows Defender. The moment you open it, you'll notice something happened, right? At this point, a lot of users might think that, you know, it is Excel updating itself. It's an auto update that is happening. And from non-tech standpoint, this happens quite a lot. You notice a couple of windows jumping up, then immediately closing. So Windows does this quite a lot as well. Now, what had happened behind the scene was a file was downloaded. And the moment you click on this, it will go ahead, open the file. And at this point, your whole machine will be compromised. So this is just an image of WannaCry. But the fact of the matter is that we were able to successfully download an .exe file and then run it on the machine. And at this point, we can do quite a lot of things as an attacker. So to quickly go back on the format of it, just a second. Just a second, for some odd reason, my Chrome crashed. Yeah. So now we can notice that VirusTotal provided us with, you know, 4 out of 61 detection, and it was a successful execution of macro files. The VBA script that we have, or the macro script that we have, is very straightforward. So this is the first one. So we have something called auto open. So auto open indicates anytime a file or Excel is opened, what to run. So this dictates that this is a program, and in program, what we are using is we are using curl utility to download a file from this specific domain. It's called ui.exe, the file name. And we run this and it is saved as ui.exe. Now we have one more macro which says that anytime the worksheet is activated, we have to run this program. So that's how simple the macro is. And it ends up, you know, running the .exe file. Now, on top of this, we can do a lot of obfuscation. We can go ahead, reverse the string. For example, a lot of times, static analyzer would be performing checks that, you know, it has to start with https://. Now, if you invert the string, it's all messed up. It's no longer https://. It's the opposite way around. So this is just a very basic VBS script, but we can have, like, quite complicated script to evade the AVs. But the fact of the matter is, even this simple script was undetected on Gmail side. And as a result, the macro triggered. Windows Defender didn't say anything. And we ourselves were surprised that, you know, with this lack of check by mail clients and the AVs.
Very interesting. So how is the VB script stored in an Excel document file? So how is that stored?
So now there used to be a time where the client device used to be like, 1 gig, 4 gigs, and eventually it has been coming up to a good number over time. So 8 gigs, now we are taking a look at 16 gigs and 32 gig machine. So back in the days, Microsoft themselves were optimizing on all fronts. So the original file structure itself consisted of a directory, and it was a file system in itself. So since Windows Office 2007, they changed it to have some sort of compression built in. So the Excel file that we see today, so let me go back to my VM. So here, so this is the XLSM file. So what I'll do is I'll simply change the extension of this file to emp.zip. So this file, the XLSM file itself, and XLSX, DocX, all of these files are actually zip files. So they took the original version and then they have a zip compression built on top. So the original versions, the new version is still in there, but the overall file is a zip archive now. So if we try to extract it, so now I'll go to extract all. So this is the actual file content, right? So this way, what ends up happening is here, we have VBA project.bin. So this is where the macro file is actually present. So anytime this file is present, it's a clear indication that the Excel file, the doc file, has macro capabilities. Now within this file itself, it's a very big file system, and there's like notion of streams, which further contain what exact code has to run when a specific sheet is triggered, or you know the Excel opens up. Just a second. So this is how the structure looks like. We have quite a lot of XML file. All of this is packaged in form of a zip. And inside, depending upon the type of the file, if it is Word or if it is Excel, if it is Word, then we'll have Word directory inside which we have VBA project. If it is Excel, then we have VBA project.bin in that specific directory. Now this further VBA project.bin further expands to a full blown file system. So they have done quite a lot of optimization, and this was primarily done to make sure that the Excel file, all of the documents loads super fast on devices that might not have that much configuration. And in today's world, to be honest, the machines are quite powerful. So all of the file, you know, the compression, all of these might not be required or might not be as useful as it used to be way back. So this brings us to exciting, This brings us to the exciting part of how attacks are happening on with macro. So now, like I mentioned, each worksheet, each spreadsheet will have its own stream. And now if there is a presence of VBA, what ends up happening is there is something called performance cache, and there is the actual source code. So performance cache, as the name suggests, is to make sure everything loads super fast. So what ends up happening is in the module stream, let me go back. So here, all of these are like corresponding to, the worksheet, the module, and so on. So if we go back again, so this one will be stored in a separate stream. This one will be stored in a separate stream. So these are the actual source code. Now, in the module stream, this is how it looks like. We have performance cache, and then we have compressed source code, which is the actual code of the VBA. Now, anytime Word loads up, it first checks in the module stream for the presence of performance cache. And if the version of the Office, as well as the version on which the performance cache was created, if it matches, then it goes ahead, uses it as is. If there's a mismatch, then it falls back onto the compressed source code to generate new performance cache, which in turn will be used. And anytime we are opening up the Excel and viewing the macro, so for example, if I want to view the macro, I can go to view and click on view macros, click on edit. At this point, what ends up happening is it is extracting the code from the performance cache. Now, this is provided the version matches as well as, you know, the macro is enabled. But in case if the version is not matching or if the macro is not enabled, at that point, it will automatically pick it up from the compressed source code. So now quite a lot of attacks have leveraged this presence of performance cache as well as the compressed source code. Now, AV engines, what they do is they'll be taking a look at both of these separately sometimes, and they might omit one of these, due to which it provides attackers some more space to, you know, be creative with the attack. So this is where we had two very popular attacks coming in. One was called VBA stomping and one was called VBA purging. So I'll first talk about stomping. So in VBA stomping, the performance cache contained malicious payload. So this part will have the malicious payload. And what the attacker will do is they'll have genuine content put into the compressed source code, or they'll strip out the compressed source code altogether. What this made AVs do was a lot of AVs were just checking the compressed source code. They were processing it, decompressing it, and taking a look at all the strings. And if there was nothing malicious, they'll flag the file as genuine. Now, with the genuine compressed code, what happened was attacker was able to leverage exactly this. The performance cache is not being checked. As a result, AV would pass on malicious files. So this attack was detected back in 2016. The main important aspect about this attack is that the attackers requires the knowledge of the client version, because performance cache will only be used if the client version matches exactly with, you know, the version of the performance cache of the Excel file. If there's a mismatch, then the compressed source code will be used. So now there were various ways with which you can go ahead, figure out. The client version of the Office software. Popularly, document template files were being used. Anytime the document template file was fetched, Microsoft advertised the version of the client which is fetching it. As a result, attacker could leverage a combination of template files plus malicious macro file to compromise the end user. Now, this was first detected back in 2016, and it came to prominence in 2018, where mass attacks were demonstrated and possibility of how crazy the attack can be and the impact it can have. Another attack that we see nowadays is something called VBA purging. So in VBA purging, what happens was we go ahead, get rid of performance cache. And why do we do it? Because antiviruses, what they'll do is they'll have Yara rules and a couple of very simple checks being performed on the performance cache side. So this is a change that a lot of AVs had done, analyzing performance cache the best they can. So if you go ahead, strip out the performance cache, and you only have the compressed source code, and if the source code is malicious, AV, if they're not checking the source code, then it will end up, you know, being passed as a malicious or a genuine Excel file. So that's exactly what happened with VBA purging. In this case, the macro is generated from source code. As a result, any AVs that take a look at performance cache won't figure out that the file is malicious, and the payload will be delivered as is. So one thing we have noticed is that AVs are not taking a look at both performance cache as well as source code to great degrees. As a result, it's very easy to go ahead, forge very simple macro files and even do a lot of obfuscation on top of it to prevent the detection further.
So since the antiviruses have doing a bad job of detecting macros, how does SquareX approach this problem?
So with SquareX, what we are doing is we know that a lot of things we can do on the client side itself, particularly on the browser. Reason being, browser in the past 5-6 years have become much more powerful. The client device has become powerful. We are talking about 16 gigs, 32 gig in even larger powerful machines. So with SquareX, what we are going to do is we are going to do in-browser file analysis. And first, we are going to provide the best security we can provide on the existing webmail clients, starting with Gmail. So anytime you receive a malicious attachment, suspicious attachment, first we'll do a file type analysis right on the browser itself. And based on this, if we detect that there's a presence of a macro file, then we'll do some advanced check on the file to figure out if the macro is malicious. And if it is malicious, then we'll provide you options to download the clean file or go ahead and download a PDF version of it. So all of these are the features that will be rolled out with SquareX's new file analyzer feature. So let me jump into a demo. So right now I have sent, this is the file mismatch, file type mismatch one. So what I'll do is I'll go to extension, I'll quickly enable this, and I'll reload the page. So the moment you go ahead, open any mail, what we'll do is we'll perform checks on all of the attachments that are present. And here, as you can notice, we have file type mismatch flagged right away. So this is something none of the mail clients are doing right now. And all of this is happening right there on the browser. So we are very focused on privacy. We do not want the file to be sent to, external servers. And people sometimes don't want their file to be sent. It could contain some confidential information. It could be some sensitive invoice or, contract details, whatnot. So everything has to happen on the most thing that can happen on the browser. It's best to do on the browser itself. So the moment you click on it, it will tell you that this is the claimed extension. It says PDF. This is the mined type. And this is the detected extension. So there's a mismatch. So you have to be cautious about it. There's also an option to open this in our disposable file viewer. So this was an example of, file type mismatch detection right there on your browser, providing some more clarity to the user that they have to be cautious about this. Now, next we have the malicious Excel file that we sent over. So it performed a couple of checks. First, it detected that, it is an XLS file. And once it detected that, then it performed further checks to figure out that it analyzed the macro and it told that, this macro contains, we are doing source code analysis right now. So this contains a couple of keywords that are very, very risky. And if the presence of this usually indicates that it is used for, malicious activities. So here we have auto open shell, all of these being used. And then in the IOC, we have this URL that's being leveraged to download the payload. And we have an exe file, which is always, always a bad sign for any attachment to come in. Now, a lot of times, I forgot to mention that the mark of the web that we talked about, right? So one way of evading that is to create a zip file and have your attachment put inside that and then send over the zip. So what ends up happening is the moment you extract the zip, now the files internally or present in the zip won't have mark of the web. So Defender might not go ahead perform additional checks, as well as Excel software, the Office software might not perform additional checks. Yeah. So this is one such example, very simple, macro being detected by our detector. Now, I can also go ahead and send one more macro.
It's pretty amazing how quickly it detects it. I mean, it's almost, It's instantaneous. I mean, you open it up and...
Yeah, it happens super fast. And it's all in the browser, so.
Yeah, it's almost like it almost gives the appearance as integrated into Gmail, that it works that well, that it almost seems like a feature. Gmail.
It's pretty good, pretty good. That's the idea. We want to go ahead, provide the best security we can while ensuring, you know, we don't go ahead and evade the privacy of someone. So everything, as long as it's happening on the browser, it's best to do it there. And so I also have like these malicious macro file, right? So if I open this up and it flagged it as malicious, you click on this, it's the same file. Second, let me go back and open another one. Yeah. So here we are also detecting VBA purging. So we figured out that there was no performance cache found in the VBA project stream. As a result, it indicates that usually whenever you're creating an Excel file, it must have the performance cache as well as the source code. But if it does not have, that means it has been tampered with, especially in a way to evade AVs. So this detection is also something we are doing right there on the browser. Oh, this is another. So we're trying out, you know, how well the detection work when we have bulk files. It will take a second and there you go. So it detected all of these as like containing potential macro file. And some of these are older Microsoft Office version. So with MS Office, both the new version and the old version is supported for backward compatibility. As such, attackers are leveraging both of these formats. So the way we have built out this feature is to make sure it works across all of the versions. It will safely go ahead, figure out that it is a malicious file, whether it has been purged in any way. And so
if someone was sending a macro, this would also be able to detect that it's a legitimate macro and not malicious, correct?
Correct, yeah. So anytime the analysis itself will indicate. So in case if we detect is like genuine macro will mention that, you know, it does not contain any sort of malicious payloads that can cause damage. But it will indicate that there's a presence of macro just to caution the user that they have to be careful. Now, in case if someone wants to download a clean version, if you click on this, we are going to download a macro free version. So all of this is happening right there on the browser. The file is not sent anywhere. So you click on this. Now, I can quickly show. This is the same file. So this is the macro content of it. So I'll quickly close this. And now, if I open this file, and if I just enable this, click on View, go to Macro again. And here you can notice there is no macro. So this is a macro free version created right there in your browser in case if you know you're concerned that something can go wrong. So this option is available to the users as well. Now in case if they want to be even more secure, what they can do is they can create a PDF version of the file. In this case, the file is sent to our cloud to perform the conversion, but that is an add-on in case if you want to do a very super safe conversion. So it will take a few seconds, and then the PDF version of the file will be available to view for you. And PDF is considered much safer than traditional Word document files and so on. So these are the features that we have baked into our file analysis, and more importantly, complementing Gmail, providing better security for our users.
Yeah, I just can't go on enough about just how easy you make it to use SquareX, you know, because trying to do things their traditional way is a lot more difficult and risky. So there's really, I mean, you know, some cases like showing some other features, you right click to open files and do this and that. Yeah. But it's really nice with this. It just, you just open up your Gmail and it lets you know whether it's malicious or not. And you're able to see the details. So that's a really nice addition.
Yeah, even VirusTotal, can't do or it's not doing this level of detection. And, not everyone is going to go ahead and upload a file on VirusTotal. You're concerned about privacy. Normal users or non-security folks are not even aware of VirusTotal for the most part. So this helps out a lot for everyone, tech, non-security folks, security folks, everyone. Makes it super easy, super seamless to use without impacting your regular browser activity. And this is primarily because, again, you know, the browser have become much more powerful and we are capable of doing this level of detection. So the limitation of Gmail or like the mail delivery system is the file should not exceed 30 MB. So 30 MB is pretty small compared to what memory and resources are available on the browser. And all of this can be done on the browser itself.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's a really nice new feature.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. So we are going to roll out quite a lot of features around Gmail itself. One recent incident that happened with our own team was someone was able to spoof an email with another email. And what ended up happening was our ticketing system picked it up. And Gmail just showed a warning that, you know, this could be, you have to be a little cautious, but our ticketing system picked it up from inbox because Gmail put it in inbox. As a result, our customer support team honored the request of the user. And it showed, you know, the problem that we have right now with the whole email deliverability, email client security. And in the upcoming few weeks, we'll be rolling out very good security features, very good checks to, you know, prevent the email email-based attack vectors from compromising the end users.
Oh, very nice. So is there anything else that we have to discuss today, or is this complete
this
session?
Is the feature for at least for today. In the upcoming weeks, we'll be rolling out quite a lot of new features. So
yeah, that's very nice. Yeah, it's very nice. You're already an amazing product and adding this to it. So, I mean, it just really has me excited to see what features that you release in the future. This is a very nice addition. As I mentioned, you know, it just seems so seamless with Gmail. You open it up and it's almost instantaneous. And not only is it telling you contains macros, it tells you the details. Because as I was kind of mentioning, you know, some people are legitimately using macros. And that's kind of part of the reason Microsoft goes back and forth on enabling or not enabling, because some people are needing that function. So it's really nice that you're able to go in and get the details besides just being blocked, you know.
Yeah, I agree. It's like massively used macros and Office. There was this one time where we went to this shopping center and suddenly we realized, you know, their whole management of inventories, the billing generation, everything is happening right there on Excel. So that's how powerful it is and, you know, the capability it has to offer. At the same time, the complexity of macro, most people are unaware of it. You know, having a full-blown file system packaged in just one single file and how crazy it can be to detect, you know, malicious macros. So it's a big pain and, you know, it's going to be a fight moving forward, back and forth game between the attackers as well as the detection companies, AVs, to, you know, properly block macros from triggering. And this is our first step towards macro detection. Later on, we'll be performing some more advanced check to see if we can, you know, block even super complicated, difficult to detect macro files. But this solution itself, you know, is a good add-on to the existing clients that are out there. We'll also be extending this to regular file downloads. So anytime you download a file, at that point, we can perform some check and let you know that you have to be cautious because this file indicates presence of malicious content in it.
Yes, yeah, this is amazing. I'm sure there's going to be, as this catches on, people are going to be recommending this to their older relatives that aren't so technical. And I can see that a lot of IT organizations and security departments will want to adopt this product because it makes things so much easier. When you just tell people not to click on things, not to open this, someone's going to. So if you've got something like SquareX in place, then you can kind of help reduce that risk.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Well, it was great discussing this with you. Thank you for showing the demo and telling about the new features. I'm sure the listeners will enjoy these new features. And for anyone listening, this is a free download, a free browser plugin. It's very easy to install. There's no configuration to it, so very easy to use. A lot easier than trying to control your security through the browser, which can be very complicated, and you still miss things. So, awesome product.
Yeah, thank you so much, Philip. It was really good to be back on the show, and hoping to see more shows in the future.
Yeah, look forward to seeing you back again to hear about new features. So, thanks again.
Thank you.
Thanks everyone for joining, and make sure to get your SquareX browser plugin. It will be in the show notes so you can easily find that, and it's free. So what else can be better than free to add that little extra added protection? Actually, not a little added protection, but a lot of protection.
Thank you for listening to The Philip Wiley Show. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. In the meantime, to learn more about Philip, go to thehackermaker.com and connect with him on LinkedIn and Twitter at Philip Wiley. Until next time.